The final case for oral argument this morning is Kirksey and Ruby Appellants versus Grohman and Randall Appellees. For the appellants, we have Mr. Dwight Gubru, an attorney from Belle Fourche, and for the appellees, we have Ms. Rhonda Miller, an attorney from Belle Fourche. Justice Meyer Henry is here, but she has coughing spells this morning and is concerned that if she starts, it then forces the attorney to basically yell over her. And so she will listen to the oral arguments because we do record these. And she's read the briefs and she will fully participate, but she just thought she would let counsel argue at a lower level. So she will fully participate with us nevertheless. So with that, Mr. Gruber, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dwight Gruber. I'm an attorney in Belle Fourche, and I represent the appellants Lorraine Kirksey and Lucille Ruby. To review the facts of this case, on July 10th, 2001, Grace Kirksey died. She was survived by four daughters, Dorothy Grohman, Eileen Randall, Lucille Ruby, and Lorraine Kirksey. The four sisters inherited a ranch, which consists of just over 2,700 acres of land in Butte County, South Dakota, and 401 acres in Crook County, Wyoming. After the estate was settled, approximately a year after Grace Kirksey's death, the four sisters decided to form a limited liability company, and they named it Kirksey Family Ranch, LLC. The purpose of that LLC was to hold title to the ranch. And at the time of Grace Kirksey's death, her daughter Dorothy Grohman lived on the ranch with her and helped her operate the ranch. The LLC was formed to take title to the land and lease that land to Dorothy, Eileen, and Lorraine Kirksey so that the three sisters could continue operations of the ranch. After the LLC was formed, each of the four sisters contributed their undivided one-quarter interest in the ranch land to the LLC in exchange for a 25% membership interest in the LLC. Under the terms of the operating agreement, the LLC would act by a majority vote of the membership interests. And when they formed the LLC, Dorothy Grohman, the oldest sister who lived on the ranch, was elected to serve as manager of the LLC. As manager and as the personal representative, Dorothy Grohman was responsible for working with the attorney to draft the LLC and draft a lease for the ranch. The lease is a very critical element in this case. Under the terms of the lease, Dorothy Grohman, Eileen Randall, and Lorraine Kirksey were the tenants for farming and ranching. The initial term of the lease provided for a five-year lease that would terminate on August 31st, 2007. The lease also provided that unless the landlord or the tenant provided notice of termination, the lease would automatically renew for additional one-year terms. The rent in the lease is fixed at $14,263, and there's no provision in the lease for increasing the amount of rent charged on any renewal. The lease also provides that the landlord, the LLC, is responsible for paying the real estate taxes and the insurance on the ranch. That's a unique term in commercial leases. Most of the time, the tenant is responsible for paying the taxes and insurance, but in this particular case, the landlord's responsible for paying the taxes and insurance. This unique provision has caused a great deal of problems. Because of the cost of taxes and insurance, the vast majority of the rent is consumed by that expense alone. For instance, in 2006, after the taxes and insurance were paid, out of that $14,263 in rent, there was only $4,400 in net rental income, which was distributed and shared among the four members.
Let me ask you, you said that Dorothy, as the manager, is the one that had these documents. Did the other sisters seek any independent legal advice to look over this lease and this LLC to see if it maybe might have protected their individual interests?
No, Your Honor. Less than a year after the lease started, the relationship between the three tenants started to break down. Lorraine Kirksey at the time resided in California. Her relationship with Dorothy and Eileen became strained, primarily because Lorraine did not feel that she was getting adequate information. Grohman refused to share information with her willingly. She would not share control, and she generally resisted Lorraine's inquiries into what's occurring on the ranch. Kirksey ultimately withdrew from the lease by selling her interest in the livestock to the other two sisters. And today, Kirksey no longer participates as a tenant under the lease. Since that time, the four sisters have become estranged. Serious disagreements have arisen over operation of the LLC. Grohman, as the manager, has refused to willingly share information with the other members. Grohman has provided false information on occasion, and to her explanation is that she did not knowingly or intentionally provide false information. Grohman has resisted involvement by Kirksey and Ruby in the LLC affairs. She's refused to permit Randall has refused to provide information to allow either Ruby or Kirksey to contact her directly. And overall, the interaction between the members is hostile, combative, unpleasant, and now rare.
You know, the idea of having an LLC is just sweeping the country. I know that people talk about this as a way to pass your family farm or the ranch or even your cabin. You know, this is the solution to avoid the state taxes and so forth. Looking at this document, is there some clause in there that allows when the stockholders don't get along, it allows them to find a way to dissolve? Or is there a two-part question? Is there a clause generally used that's missing in this document that many LLCs have that enables the parties to get out of an intractable situation like this one?
Excellent question, Justice Konenkamp. In this particular operating agreement, there is no exit mechanism or manner to allow one member to withdraw. And hopefully I'll remember to come back to this, but I want to talk about this operating agreement. The appellees have tried to argue that there is an exit mechanism, and I will argue that there is not. If you look at Section 8.3 of the operating agreement, I think it's page A23 of the appellee's brief, it provides a restriction on transfer. And that's what it is. It's not an exit mechanism. And this particular restriction on transfer is very common. And what that provides is if one member wishes to sell their interest in the LLC, before they can sell that to anyone, they must first offer their interest for sale to the LLC. And if the LLC does not buy that interest, then the other members have an opportunity to purchase that interest. If neither the LLC or the other members purchase that LLC interest, then the withdrawing member has the right to sell it to a third party.
Which is pretty worthless here, isn't it?
Exactly.
Wants to buy a third minority interest.
There's no buyers. No one wants to buy and get into a family relationship that they're not a part of the family. That's not an exit mechanism, but what you've asked about is commonly done in LLCs. In fact, the case that I've cited, if you look at Haley versus Talcott, there was an exit mechanism, and albeit even though there was this exit mechanism, the court ordered involuntary dissolution in that case. But in the Haley versus Talcott case, and in many other cases, what there is a right for a member to withdraw. In Haley versus Talcott, there was the restriction that before the person could sell to another party, they had to offer it to the other members for sale. That protects those members who want to continue doing the business, and that's fair. But in Haley versus Talcott, it said if the LLC or the other members don't purchase this membership interest, those members then have the right to force liquidation of the company. And that's commonly done. And that's what needed to be done in this case. Unfortunately, it wasn't. Oftentimes, there's also buy-sell agreements. When you start the company, you agree as members that if one of us wants out, the other members have the right or obligation to purchase that member's interest, albeit oftentimes there's a negotiated price that's favorable to those who want to continue doing business.
So in this case, you don't have that in the contracts, and so you've got to go back on the law, the statutes that enable, that allow LLCs to exist, and you have to find your right to dissolve this in that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. We don't have any choices here. Our hands are tied at this point, and we're stuck in a relationship that is not working, and it's unreasonable for this company to continue to the benefit of 50% of the members, but to the detriment to the other 50%, my clients.
You know, and I just bring you to the question to you. Now, I understand this corporation was created by these four sisters at a time when they were getting along. Now they don't, and now it seems as if two sisters have complete control and two sisters are out. But doesn't the corporation have its own independent existence that supersedes the sisters no matter what their wishes are, unless they can agree?
Well, that was discussed, or it was alleged. One of the things that the appellees, one of the defenses they originally asserted was that we failed to join an indispensable party because the company is not named as a party. And that was pushed a little, and then ultimately that motion to dismiss was withdrawn. And I like to think one of the reasons is if the company was a party to this case, what position would the party take? 50% of the people say that the company should dissolve. 50% of the members say the company should remain. So the company is the members, and the company can't take a position independent of what those members' vote is. So to say the company is a separate entity is true, but in this case, we're deadlocked, and there's no clear direction and no ability for the company to decide what position or what action to take. We're in gridlock. And in the cases I've cited, the courts address those. I think in the Haley versus Talcott court, the court says, well, sure, the LLC is continuing to do business at this time, but it's just status quo. Because of the gridlock, it will continue. But that is not doing business in accordance with the operating agreement, which states that there should be a majority vote of the members.
This company is a little bit different than the companies in the cases you cite with their businesses trying to make a profit. When you look at the operating, when you look at these documents, it looks like the only thing this ranch exists for is to be a ranch and to run cattle or whatever, but there doesn't seem to be a profit. Profit doesn't seem to be one of the purposes.
Well, profit was admittedly not the fundamental driving force of this LLC. But all of the members envisioned at least making some money off of this. Interestingly, and I want to come back to your point, but I do need to touch on, if this were a corporation, we'd have the absolute right to dissolution. If you look at it, STCL 47-1A-1430, it specifically states when the directors and shareholders of a corporation are deadlocked, the shareholders are entitled to dissolution. Now, I don't know why a corporation shareholder should have a superior right to dissolution over the members of an LLC. That is inconsistent.
But that statute doesn't apply here.
No, because that applies to corporations.
You're just arguing by analogy.
Overall, the relationship between the sisters has broken down. There's no personal communication. Any communication they do have involves their attorneys. The trial court itself found that the relationship of the parties is broken down. And because of these disagreements, my clients ultimately called a meeting. At that meeting, this was called prior to the end of the initial lease term. At that meeting, my clients made a motion to first terminate the lease at the end of its initial five-year term. That vote, that motion failed with a tie vote. My clients voted their 50% membership interest to terminate the lease at the end of the initial lease term, and the tenants voted to keep the lease going and opposed that motion. My clients then voted or made a motion to dissolve the LLC and liquidate the LLC's assets. And their 50% interest voted to terminate or dissolve the LLC, while the tenants who have the lease voted against that motion. Consequently, on September 1 of 2007, this lease renewed, and it renewed under the same terms. For 1 year, same rent. We can't increase the rent. An important fact in this is when this lease started back in 2002, the sisters valued the ranch based upon the date of death value, which was $550,000. They had it appraised for estate tax purposes, and the appraiser said the ranch is worth $550,000. In that five-year time, this ranch has increased in value to what my clients, their professionals have said that it is worth $3.2 million, and the appellees have said it's worth at least $2.4 million. If there had been a corresponding increase in rent during those 5 years, or if at the end of the five-year term we increase rent from that $14,000 based upon the increase in value, the rent today would be somewhere between $83,000 and $62,000. So it's been a dramatic change in circumstances from what those sisters anticipated at the time this lease started. This is an area that's very beautiful, and it's highly sought after ground now. It's tree-covered ground that borders on Wyoming and extends into the state of Wyoming.
You know, that's an interesting point, because you're not really arguing that the sisters tried to renegotiate the lease. It really looks more like a black and white situation where that special meeting was held simply to terminate the lease and terminate the LLC, not renegotiate the lease at a better price. And I wonder if that doesn't really show that perhaps this request to dissolve might be a little premature.
Well, Justice Zinner, there have been negotiations, and we have not explored all those with the court because that's really not evidence of anything, other than you will see in the record that my clients have tried to negotiate. The appellees like to say they've never offered to change the lease. Well, and I think that's a disingenuous argument. But they haven't offered to increase the rent either.
But this was summary judgment.
Yes.
And the affidavits that I've looked at only discuss negotiating division of the land or having a special meeting to, quote, terminate the lease or to dissolve the LLC. I didn't see anything. Talked about negotiations to modify the lease, to get them back to the same economic purpose that they were at when it started.
Well, Your Honor,
correct me if I'm wrong. Something in the record?
I think the record shows that the parties have negotiated. What those offers of have not been set forth in the record, certainly have not been. Partition was what my clients originally sought, is they wanted their share of the land, and those negotiations failed. And we negotiated from the point of the time of the meeting occurred in May of 2006. This action wasn't started until October and November.
Of course, partition would not fit within the meeting or the purpose of the LLC. The LLC certainly wasn't set up to partition.
You're absolutely correct. Section 8.1 of the operating agreement specifically states that the members don't have an interest in the assets of the LLC, so partition is not an option for us. If they would not have formed the LLC, this would have been a partition action, and ultimately my clients would have received either their land or their share of the value of that land. Whether they agreed with what the court's ultimate decision was, they would be entitled to receive something. In this case, it's unreasonable. It is not reasonably practicable for this LLC to continue. And because of the fixed rent, the purpose of this LLC is going to be frustrated. Right.
Let me interrupt you right there. That's my point. You said is going to be frustrated. So again, I bring you back to the question. Aren't we really premature, or wouldn't we be premature in requiring the trial court to dissolve when, you know, I'm not sure that the affidavits show that is happening at this point?
I think you're absolutely wrong, Justice Sinner. This is not premature. The statute specifically states that dissolution should be ordered when the economic purpose of the company is likely to be unreasonably frustrated. The word likely is looking to the future. And right now we have a situation where my client's hands are tied and they're locked into a lease that already consumes the vast majority of the rent. And as land values increase, generally taxes also increase. Do my clients have to sit and wait until they're forced to subsidize their sister's ranching operation? It's not premature for my clients to have to sit back and simply say, well, I guess we're stuck in this, so we'll just stick around, and then wait until it's a negative and the LLC can't even support its obligations under the lease. Is that when this action becomes ripe? I don't believe so.
Didn't you bring that argument on yourself a little bit, because you said the purpose will be frustrated, implying that it's not frustrated at this point? But when they only receive about $1,000 a rent apiece, isn't it already frustrated?
I think it is frustrated, Your Honor.
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Ms. Miller, you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. If this court were to take the action that the appellant, their attorney, Mr. Grubhut, has just proposed, a dissolution of this LLC, I believe the end result will be a flood of litigation. We have many members of LLCs out there that have a 50% interest. They will assert that they're entitled to dissolution due to a deadlock.
Well, we provide for dissolutions of corporations, and the world doesn't end.
An LLC is a completely different entity than a corporation, and presumably that's why these folks chose an LLC. They had a number of options, and also back to Justice Konenkamp's question, one of the appellants did have legal representation and did have a significant amount of contact with the LLC attorney. That was not a fact that was brought up at the trial court at the trial level, but it was.
It has to be in the record before
yes.
you can use it.
I understand that.
Well, what are they supposed to do then? Just keep going on forever?
There is the exit mechanism, which I would disagree with Mr. Grubhut, provides a way out for these folks. Their purpose was to protect this land. It was not to make money. They made $4,000 in 2006, the same as they made in 2005, 2004, 3, and 2. The income has not changed. Taxes could go up in the future. Apparently, so far, they have not significantly. The exit mechanism allows these folks to, number one, try to sell to the LLC, then to the other members, and if not, to someone else. They are selling their interest in the LLC and not the property. They have focused throughout this whole ordeal stating that the appellees could not afford to buy this property, and therefore the exit mechanism is useless. What their operating agreement states is they buy the interest in the LLC, not the property. And I believe, as one of you stated, that's certainly not going to be worth the same amount as the real property. But there was a reason these folks set this land up this way. Their goal was to keep this land in the family. This is land that had been in the family for over 100 years. They set it up to protect it from spouses, to protect it from family, and, of course, to avoid inheritance taxes. That's been the overriding purpose, and that purpose has not changed. The only thing that has changed is the appellant's interest in dissolving the property, possibly due to the increase in value, in dissolving the LLC due to the increase in value. Simply because two members of an LLC change their mind should not allow them to end the LLC, sell the property. There's all these LLCs in the state, probably more so this will affect small LLCs, two-member LLCs, four-member LLCs that own a substantial amount of property, have significant business assets. All it would take in a two-member LLC is for one person to want to dissolve.
Is that really true? I mean, here we're not talking about any minority interests. There are no minorities here. There are just two equal sides, and one side gets 100% benefit from the LLC, and the other side gets zero of it, or minuscule.
Two thoughts there. First of all, argument that it's impracticable to continue to operate under the LLC, Mr. Gugrud has alleged that the continued animosity between these folks is so bad that this LLC should be dissolved. That there is where I'm concerned with the minority interest being able to dissolve.
But you don't answer my question. Is this really a minority here? We don't have a minority. Well, we have 50-50.
In this particular case, correct.
And it would be a different thing if it was one sister against three. I can see your argument happens, of course, but it becomes a little bit more difficult for us when it's 50-50.
I understand. And in that sense, first of all, there's still three individuals on this lease. It has been my client's contention from the very beginning that this animosity was created when two of the sisters wanted to dissolve and pushed and pushed and pushed, with the other two remaining sisters wanting to keep the LLC in place to protect the land as was originally intended. These two sisters, well, first of all, there's still three sisters on the lease. One sister, admittedly, in her deposition, has been told, come back, live on the ranch, be involved with the ranch. She lives in California. She's never been here since she agreed to run livestock on the ranch and signed a lease. She has not been excluded. Eileen Randell and Dorothy Grohman have continued to do what this LLC was set up to do. The end result may be that they benefit. They have not tried to take advantage of this LLC. They have never been asked to increase the rent payment. In fact, at the special meeting or the meeting of the LLC where appellant proposes that they sought to terminate the lease agreement, I specifically asked, and it's in the transcript, for what purpose? And they stated to, don't quote me, I'll paraphrase, to terminate the LLC and to maximize the profit. That has been their goal. There's not an issue on management issues. The sole issue here is whether to dissolve or not to dissolve. They have the exit mechanism. They can make the offer, obtain three appraisals or less if they can be agreed upon, sell their interest. If not to these folks, then to somebody else. Well, first of all, I think possibly the LLC or the two remaining members would be realistic if they were looking at an interest in an LLC. Specifically, these two members of the LLC want to keep the LLC intact. My clients want to keep that LLC intact and continue to honor the purpose for which it was.
But your clients don't have to buy it. I mean, they're sitting pretty. They don't have to buy anything. All they have to do is say, we're not doing anything. And they get, isn't that right? I mean,
good point. And then who would buy it? I understand that. I guess in that, if that were the case, I would say there's a reason for that. The whole purpose for this LLC, unlike probably most of them out there, was not to earn an income, not motivated by money at all. It was to protect this land. And maybe going back to the intention of the drafters, and I would note that actually Mrs. Ruby, one of the appellants, drafted a lease, not one of the appellees. The intention of the drafters, who all four worked with this attorney, was to protect this land. It should be hard to get out of an LLC. I would point out, I found a law review article written by Mr. Getzinger, Patrick Getzinger, who was on the commission that business law committee charged with the responsibility of reviewing and drafting the South Dakota Limited Liability Company Act. And it's noted in there that one of the reasons, one of the advantages of the Uniform Limited Liability Company Act was a company is not as easily dissolvable. They further go on to point out the advantage of allowing the members to agree on a majority of matters. LLCs are based in contract.
Did you cite that law review article in your brief?
I did not. It was something I found since that time.
Well, since it's a whole law review article, unless if justice objects, we'll waive the requirement of the 15. Just give us the cite now, would you, so we can...
It's Volume 44, Issue 2, the South Dakota Limited Liability Company Act, The Next Generation Begins, by Patrick Getzinger, Brian Kirkby, and Terrence Nemec.
Okay, thank you.
You know, let me take you back to the purpose of the LLC. You know, I mean, the test is, are we going to frustrate the economic purpose? Or is it going to be unreasonably frustrated? Is the economic purpose of the LLC fixed forever at the time of the drafters of the original agreement? Or can a business evolve over a period of time? You know, and what I'm leading to, of course, in this case is, you know, they may have started this LLC to not make money, to keep it in the family. But why can't the purpose of an LLC, like any other business, evolve over a period of time? And today, the purpose of the LLC might be something different. Why should we not permit that to happen?
I think we should permit that to happen. And in fact, the operating agreement listed a whole number of potential purposes for this LLC, which we're not necessarily opposed to. However, dissolving the LLC destroys every one of those purposes. And that is the only option that the appellants have ever given us.
Well, why couldn't termination of the lease and development of the property be a purpose?
While that's not one of the specific purposes it was formed, I wouldn't disagree that that could be a purpose. There again, appellant specifically stated, we want to dissolve the lease and terminate the LLC for the purpose of maximizing the profit. That was the only option given at that special meeting. That was the only alternative.
You know, maybe this isn't on the record, but is it really fair to argue that? I mean, when you look at the evidence, your clients have never acted any way but for their own interests. Is it really fair to say, well, you know, they didn't make us an offer about changing the lease, all they wanted to do? Is that really kind of a futile? I mean, if we send this case back to see if that kind of offer would be considered, are we just wasting minutes, you know, because these two sisters of your clients, they don't have to negotiate anything the way things are set up now. And the judges rule, why should they have to change the lease? That isn't it.
I don't think that's futile at all to see if these folks can work out a different lease or some other use of the property. But I also believe the evidence of record reflects that Dorothy Broman, as a manager, went over and above what was required of a typical manager. She's sending these folks statements every month. She's providing taxes when the appellant seeks a different tax provider. Eventually, that's where they go. When the appellant wants online access to the accounts, it eventually happens. Dorothy is the oldest sister, not always up on the ways and means of email and online accounting, which resulted in apparently a conflict between the sisters. It was ultimately resolved. These are minor issues, and I hesitate to call them petty, but at the same time, these are not management issues. They have been resolved.
They have been resolved, but the central focus is the lease and the land. And how long does this deadlock have to continue before the statute's been satisfied? The statute says it's likely to frustrate. I mean, how much longer does this have to go on before the appellants are entitled to their case?
I believe under Dunbar, which is a Virginia case, and I would note that I don't think we've found any good on-point cases from any state that has the Uniform Limited Liability Company Act. So I kind of hesitate to refer you to this, but it looks fairly on point under the Dunbar case. One member who was apparently had some wrongful conduct was disassociated, but yet wanted a dissolution of the LLC. It was a two-member LLC. One member's disassociated. Obviously, he's left out in the cold forever without a dissolution, but the court kept it in place. It said it should be the harshest standard possible.
But I don't think you've answered my question. How long does this have to go? How long does this deadlock have to continue before the statute's been set?
Well, if the deadlock on the lease, if there was truly no other alternative, if my clients could not agree to modify the lease, and it was reasonable to modify the lease, which I'm not saying it is or isn't, and it probably is. If that were truly the case, I'm not sure there would be any certain time frame. I mean, if we're stuck in a lease that can't change in no way, no how, then we may have issues. And prematurity is probably very, very good.
You already have issues. That's why you're here.
Well, you're right. But the issue is two people want to dissolve and two don't. They entered an agreement. Shouldn't...
Your opponent says that your people think the land's now worth $2.2 million. Do you agree with that?
I think we acknowledge that it was worth at least 2.4, I think.
Yeah. 2.4, okay. And he claims they think it's worth $3.2 million. Is that right?
I believe that's their claim. Mm-hmm.
There been any offer by your people to them to purchase at anywhere near a pro rata share of that 2.4?
Not within those price ranges, no.
Have there been any offers?
There's been negotiation, as Mr. Gugrud had stated, and there's been offers.
What price range have there been offers?
Is that in the record, though?
No, no,
oh, okay.
It's not.
All anymore. Right, never mind.
And well, I'll leave it at that.
Just so we're clear on that, there's nothing in the record except the affidavits about this question of why the special meeting, what negotiations there were, what the purpose of the special meeting was.
There's affidavits as well as transcripts of depositions, and I believe there were some interrogatories placed in the record. But there was no testimony in court. I would ask this court to focus on the very strict reading of the statute. Words and phrases must be given their plain meaning and effect. And in strictly looking at those statutes, the appellants have not reached the level that would be necessary for dissolution. You've already delved into the actual economic purpose and whether it would be unreasonably frustrated. And I would submit to you today that it is not unreasonably frustrated, and it will not be unreasonably frustrated. The LLC is continuing to act in the same manner it has from the conception. Personal animosity has not affected the function of this LLC.
Kind of like a ship without a rudder, just on the surface. And two captains or whatever analogy you want to make. But half the crew wants to go north and half the crew wants to go south, and so the ship doesn't go anywhere. And it's hard to imagine that that's the business or a company. To do, you know, just basically never do anything, never change.
It's hard to imagine. However, they had land worth at least $500,000 in 2002. Why would they willingly receive $1,000 each per year from that land? I mean, that's hard to imagine.
Basically, this is the agreement they all signed, and they're stuck with it. Once they sign that agreement,
I'm saying there's ways out, but they're not really appealing ways, and they weren't intended to be appealing. This land was meant to be kept in the family. All four wanted that. I believe in a calculation it was less than 1%, less than 0.1% growth in income in 2002 as well as today, and it keeps decreasing. But that, obviously, it was not to maximize profits. The string of cases cited by the appellant focus on either partnerships or LLCs with management issues, true management issues. Here the issue is dissolution. You're essentially taking an operating agreement that requires a majority interest to dissolve and allowing 50% to dissolve if you do as appellant is asking.
Let me go back. We're out of time here, but I want to make sure I have this right, back to the record. Follow up on the question I had before. So I read your reply brief. As far as other negotiations, you relied on the Ruby affidavit and the Kirksey affidavit. That was it. Is that the extent of other negotiations?
That is all that's in the record.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep, your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Goober, you have 10 minutes.
Thank you. I want to touch on one thing. In particularly, Justice Sinner has raised a number of questions regarding the allegation that the purpose of the LLC is likely to become unreasonably frustrated. That is just one criteria that we have asked the court to dissolve the LLC under. The other is whether or not it is reasonably practicable for the company to continue to carry on business in conformity with the articles and the operating agreement. And that is another basis that we're asking this court to order dissolution. And I think if you look at the courts that I know if you look at the cases that I have cited in my brief, you will find that the states that have considered this issue have unanimously agreed that dissolution is permitted and called for when there is a deadlock between the membership. Same as the corporate statutes which provide for it. Case law that have considered this issue find that it is not reasonably practicable for a company to continue business when the membership is deadlocked. The appellees like to say, well, there's no disagreement over management issues, and all those cases discuss disagreement over management issues, and I strongly disagree. If you look at the Raposo case that I've cited, and if you look at the Navarro case I've cited, there's not a big discussion over what the management is doing and the disagreements. In fact, if you look at the Raposo case, it simply says there's a 50% deadlock. They can't operate because their operating agreement requires a majority vote before the company can act, and this is exactly what these statutes call for, is dissolution when there's a deadlock. If you look at the Navarro case, it's two guys who bought a duplex. One of them lives in it. The other one wants his money out of it, but they're deadlocked. And the guy who's living in the place, he doesn't want to break up the LLC. The court said, this is unfair to the member who wants to withdraw, and we're going to order liquidation of it, of the LLC. In the Haley versus Talcott case, it's even more similar to our case. Haley and Talcott formed an LLC that owned land that a restaurant building existed on. Talcott owned the restaurant. Haley used to manage it for Talcott. They had a falling out. Haley was fired. Talcott owned the restaurant, and he had a lease. He had a lease for the LLC's property. Haley, now out of a job, wants to get out of the LLC, and he sues for dissolution. And Talcott, who's got the place tied up under a favorable lease, he opposes dissolution. And the court says, you know what? This is a deadlock. This is not reasonably practicable for them to continue doing business. And the court acknowledges, sure, the LLC could continue. All it does is receive rent and distributes net rental income to the members. And it could continue forever. But that's just the status quo because the members are deadlocked. And that favors Talcott over Haley, just like our case. My client's hands are tied. We can't do anything. We can't increase the rent unless the tenants agree to it. And the tenants have refused. The tenants claim, well, they've never offered to increase the rent on us. Well, we don't have that option. They haven't offered to pay us any more rent. So what are we left to do? My clients want out, and we're asking the court to dissolve this LLC.
Well, if you get the LLC dissolved, does that get you out of this situation?
If you dissolve the LLC alone,
yes,
we would then have the opportunity to pursue partition. However, if you look at the authorities cited in my brief, you will find that the courts have routinely rejected anything except liquidation of the LLC's assets. There are cases in which the courts have tried to order the member who remained with the LLC to buy the withdrawing member's interest. And the appellate courts have routinely said, no, liquidation is the only option.
So they don't leave it to the discretion of the trial court based on the facts of the particular dispute. They just liquidate.
Correct. I think I can't remember the case off the top of my head. It might be the Weinman case, and it might be the Silverleaf case, where the trial court struggled. And at first it said, all right, I'm going to give the partner who stays the right to buy the withdrawing member's interest. And if he doesn't do it in 50, 60 days, then the withdrawing member has the right to purchase the other partner's interest within 50, 60 days. And I'm making up the days. And they went through that. And neither partner came up with the money to buy out the other. And they struggled and struggled and struggled. Eventually, the trial court said, okay, I'm going to impose judgment for the value of the 50% interest that's withdrawing against the remaining member. And they appealed that, and the appellate court said, no, you cannot impose judgment for the fair market value of the withdrawing member's interest. You have to liquidate this company. So that's where we are today, is we don't have the choice. And I would submit that if you would dissolve this LLC and simply put this land in the laps of the sisters, you're just going to generate more litigation because we're going to be back into court asking for partition. And if partition isn't a possibility for the court, as you know, the court can order liquidation after we burn up all that money through appraisers and referees to evaluate this property. And
so when under liquidation, it's just put up for public sale?
And everybody can come and bid, including my clients and their clients. But you're right, Justice Zinner. The record shows that the parties negotiated for partition. That was what they tried to do. There haven't been negotiations over increasing the rent. They haven't offered, and we haven't offered. We wanted our share of land, and we weren't, for various reasons, able to come up with an agreeable partition.
Joe, and all you're asking for us to do is just order the trial court to order the dissolution. They're not asking us to do it.
Well, not the Supreme Court. I'm asking you to reverse the trial court and order that the LLC business be dissolved and remand it to the trial court to carry out the liquidation.
Okay, that's not in your brief that you're asking for liquidation. Wouldn't that be something you have to, if we go along with your request, wouldn't that be something you have to argue to the trial court?
No, I don't believe that needs to be argued to the trial court. I think this court can reverse the trial court, order the dissolution of the LLC, and the dissolution will occur through liquidation. And if you look at the appellate court cases that I've cited, that's what the appellate court says is to happen. And then, of course, the machinations of how it's going to be sold. Those are things I think the trial court is better equipped to entertain. And you'll see in most of those opinions, the courts will ask for the parties to submit a proposal, and the judge will evaluate each party's proposal for how the property is to be sold. Now, the appellees like to point out that during our meeting of membership, they asked, what are you guys trying to do? And I said, we're trying to dissolve this and terminate the lease so that we can maximize the sale value. And my words were that, to that effect, because no one in their right mind is going to buy a ranch that generates $4,400 in net rental income. My clients' interests each and their clients' interests each are worth between $600,000 and $800,000 if they get $1,100 a year in income from them. Well,
and if the taxes go up, they're going to get a bill.
Exactly. It's not a marketable membership interest.
Well, you have to go back. I mean, that's okay. That's what they want now, is they want an income from the property. But papers they sign don't talk about making profit or income. Papers they sign basically talk about, we want to keep this in the family. We want to keep this ranch going because that's what Mom and Dad did.
Well, at the time, things were different. They just recently lost their mother. There was a reuniting of the family because of the death of their mother. And unfortunately, for various reasons, those relationships no longer exist. And my clients, I think it's not reasonable to force my clients, it's not reasonably practicable for this company to continue to operate to the disadvantage of two people who no longer want to be there. And that's why we're here today asking the court to dissolve the company and remand this for the court to liquidate the assets of the LLC. Thank you.
Before we close, and I'm not criticizing Mr. Gubru, but because I think I asked the question that apparently is getting into territory that wasn't briefed and Ms. Miller has never gotten a chance to talk about, and that is the remedy issue. Would you like 2 minutes to come up here and give your client's position, or do you think you want to rest on your brief? Because he is now saying he wants a liquidation on top of a dissolution of the corporation. You never got to speak to that. Court got a problem with that?
No.
2 minutes, Shirley.
If this court were to grant the appellant's request, I would ask that it be sent back to the trial court. I would assume that this court would direct them to dissolve the LLC, but then leave it up to both parties to then and the trial court to determine the proper action to be taken after that time. I know there's differing laws as to whether it should be immediately liquidated or partition can be an option. We've never gotten to that point of arguing that because it's never gotten to that point in the trial. So I would ask that that not be one of your directions to the trial court.
For what it's worth, before you get there, generally our decisions come out within 3 to 5 months of the time that oral argument has taken place. So if you two parties wish to do something on your own without all the expensive lawsuits, you know the timetable.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you for coming back up. With that, we are in recess.
Thank you.